Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Professor Frank Pommersheim of the University of South Dakota School of Law delivers opening remarks at the 15th Biennial Indian Law Symposium at USD on Wednesday night. The event is titled The Challenges of Culture, Governance, and Respect in Indian Country. It's hosted by the University of South Dakota's Native American Law Student Association chapter. He's an author and he's a poet. He also specializes in the field of American Indian law. And he's joining me for our live broadcast from SDPB Studios in Vermilion. Professor Pommersheim, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Lori. Good to be here.
Always nice to have you in the studio. And tell me a little bit about this symposium itself, the 15th biennial.
Biennial.
Oh, I lost it there. Biennial. I can spell it, but all of a sudden I can't pronounce it. Give us an overview, please.
Well, sure. The title, as you indicated, is The Challenges of Culture, Governance, and Respect in Indian Country. And so we're trying to focus on this 15th Biennial Indian Law Symposium on those very issues that come up in the context of tribal governance itself in Indian Country and across Indian Country, mm-hmm. as well as in the context of culture and tribal activism. So on one panel, we're going to have a number of elected tribal officials who serve in office, either elected or appointed offices at the tribal level. Mm-hmm. We're also going to have a tribal member from Rosebud who is elected to the state senate. And so we're looking forward to hearing their experiences as elected or appointed officers at the state level or at the tribal level. What are the issues that they face in the context of carrying out their governance responsibilities? Because the way we think about it is that it's important for people to get a sense of people who have these important elected offices at the state level or at the tribal level or appointed, how do they actually see the work that they do?
Sure.
And we want to provide them an opportunity to be speaking off the reservation or outside a peer to a community of law students and other students here at the U and community people. What is that experience actually like? And we think it's an important opportunity for people to hear, not so much from scholars and teachers, which are important, but people who are actually on the ground carrying out the his responsibilities at the tribal and state level.
Hmm. And who is the audience? The law students are coming, community can come?
Yeah, open to the public. It's free, and basically we start with the law school community and then the U community and then the greater community of Vermilion and South Dakota. And we want people to come and learn, and we hope that and I understand there'll be someone from South Dakota Public Radio actually there. So we want people just to hear from good, ordinary people that carry out this work on a day-in, day-out basis. Because our mission in the context of Native American Law Student Association is to try to communicate across spaces, across barriers, across history, so people can have a better understanding about what tribal people and people who work with tribal, what are they doing? How do they see mm-hmm. this kind of landscape? Because oftentimes in South Dakota, that landscape has kind of been blurred. It sometimes isn't very much understanding on both sides of that landscape. And so what we try to do with the Indian Law Symposium is, however temporarily, is to kind of cross those boundaries, to kind of make a bridge, provide an opportunity for people to hear and listen. And it's also being mixed in. There's always a wonderful opening prayer by Gene Thin Elk. It mm-hmm. starts with an honor song by the Oyate Singers to give it kind of the cultural context in which the symposium presents itself.
Mm. And your opening remarks, what do you plan on focusing on?
Well, that's not until tomorrow, so I don't know what I'm actually going to say. But I think what I want to do is to kind of put this in a bit of historical context at the law school. As you indicated, this is the 15th Biennial Indian Law Symposium at the University of South Dakota Law School. So that means we've been doing it for 30 years. Oh. And as I was telling you before we went on air, I believe that the USD Law School, with this longstanding Indian Law Symposium, has done it the longest of any law school in the country. So I want to put that in a bit of a context for the audience to understand how this is actually developed to try to highlight the issues we're going to be talking about. And one of the things that's actually will take place in the courtroom at USD Law School, and you've been there, Lori, but if you look at the courtroom at the USD Law School, there is the artwork. We've had artwork for every single one of the symposiums. So if you just go around the courtroom, you will see all the artwork for the previous 14 Indian Law Symposiums. It's a pretty interesting and impressive sight for people to come. And if they just want to see the artwork or see what the various topics were that we talked about in the 14 previous, they'll have the opportunity to do that.
Are law students, you know, still coming to you and interested in this topic as an area of study, and what draws them to it?
Well, two things. I think there's a developing interest in the area. It's also true that there is more and more Indian law issues, not only in South Dakota, but nationwide, as tribes do more and more in the economic sphere or more and more in the context of trying to advance self-governance. And so there are plenty of these issues that play themselves out day in, day out right here in South Dakota and throughout the West and throughout Indian country. So that's an important thing, just the growth of the field. And just, I think it's a learning experience just for ordinary citizens, because my experience in speaking for 30-plus years in South Dakota is oftentimes ordinary South Dakota non-native citizens don't really know much about these issues. No fault of their own, but the schools usually don't provide very much of an education and literacy in the context of Indian law. So part of the symposium is to provide educational kind of opportunities for people to just hear what the issues are, as well as highlighting the legal kind of thing. And so students have, I think, an increased interest in it just as a possibility for employment. One, South Dakota is actually the only state, it's amazing, the only state in the country in which Indian law is a mandatory question on the South Dakota bar examination. So if you're going to practice law in South Dakota, one of the subjects that you'll have to master and pass is Indian law. And that's a significant part of, I think, what some students are interested in learning about the field from a practical calculus, studying the areas that's going to actually be on the bar exam. And so it's a growing field. It's an important field. So it's a growing field just as a field of employment and a wide range of legal issues. But it's very important in sort of a cultural, political sense, too, where states in the West in particular and right here in South Dakota kind of come to grips with what is going to be the future relationship between Indian nations in South Dakota and the state of South Dakota. That's a very, very significant relationship. Mm-hmm. And in a small way, the symposium tries to create a conversation about it. Because one of the things in South Dakota, I would say, is that there are very few forums in which these issues are addressed on a regular basis, in which both Native and non-Native people come together to kind of share presentations and listen to each other. So as a media person, you know the importance of communication and people having the opportunity to come together. But once you ask yourself, well, are there a lot of forums that exist in South Dakota where Native and non-Native people come together on a regular basis to talk about significant issues? Sometimes those issues will make people uncomfortable. Right. I think the answer is like, no, there aren't very many forums. And one of the things over time, I think the law school has been like the leader on campus here in providing these opportunities and forums for people to learn, to listen, to show respect to each other, and be able to begin to go forward in a little bit more respectful and mutually understanding way.
Is it different for every tribe? Are there different issues for each tribe? Or is there, when we say Indian law, we're talking about, you know, all Native Americans who live in what we consider South Dakota? Or is it going to be different when you go to Rosebud versus Pine Ridge versus, Flanders?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent question. I think some of the issues are the same, but some of the issues more locally are different. For example, I think all the tribes in South Dakota, roughly speaking, have the same issues with the state. But they also have different issues in the context of their own self-governance. Okay. And so they're not identical, but they're not completely separate either. There's a great deal of overlap. I always tell my students, if you're going to work for a particular tribe, is you have to pay attention not only to the broad Indian law concepts that we talk about in class and you've learned about, but what is also the particular law of the Rosebud Sioux tribe? What does its constitution say? What are its legal traditions and custom? And so it's kind of knitting together and integrating sort of broad Indian law principles and the local law of the tribe.
How important is a race for governor? Like we will see changing over the governor for the tribes as they look at, you know, as the rest of us as non-natives look at who to cast a vote for, what kind of questions to ask from a media perspective. How significant is that kind of turnover for, you know, where those relationships, those intergovernmental relationships could go?
Well, for me, they're very, very important because the history of tribal-state relations is an important, though often submerged issue that is of great importance, I believe, in the political life of the state of South Dakota. And so whoever the candidates are that are going to be running for governor, hopefully they will address as a primary issue what their position is on tribal-state relations. How will the various candidates sort of cast the notion of what is their vision for tribal-state relations if they are elected, and what part of its campaign will those issues make up? I would suggest a good litmus test is to watch and read the various political announcements, advertisements, to see which, if any of them, actually mention in their political literature, both on the media and in the print media, about tribal state relations. Mm. Because
I'm
I think
not,
historically, yeah,
so
historically,
now, I can't speak to every single one, but I've done interviews
kind of
with the major
the
candidates, and it hasn't been something that I've seen. So, what does that tell you if it's off to the side?
Well, I think that's sort of a problem. I mean, from my point of view, tribal-state relations is an incredibly important part of political and cultural and social life in the state of South Dakota. And for me, candidates need to be thinking and addressing that issue.
What kind of answers are you looking for? A good litmus test is sort of say, are they paying attention to it? Is a candidate talking about it as something that, you know, is important to them, but in a certain way? Are tribal leaders looking for, you know, certain conversations to be had? What kind of questions will they be asking?
Well, I think the notion one is that tribal peoples want to know that the state candidates respect tribes and respect tribal sovereignty. That the basis for any meaningful conversation, I think, in Indian country with Lakota people is respect. And so I think the candidates have to show, not just say, but show respect to the history and aspirations of what tribes are trying to accomplish. And by listening to tribal people, to have a better sense from the tribal perspective, from the individual native perspective, what the issues are. That is, you can't really formulate and show respect if you decide what the issues are before you talk to the people that you want to have this relationship with. So hopefully the candidates will be talking to Native people. Hopefully they will have Native people as part of their campaigns. Hopefully they would have coordinators in Indian country that are not just showing up to recruit the vote, but actually have a presence in Indian country to hear and listen to Lakota and Dakota and Nakota people about how they see the issues in the up-and-coming very significant elections.
That makes sense. How long have you been involved with this symposium?
Since its beginning.
Since its beginning.
Yeah.
When it started?
That means I'm an older person.
That means you have a somewhat of a participation and a legacy here is how I would phrase it. And, you know, how has it changed? And when those early conversations about what it should be and how have you seen it sort of evolve over the decades?
Well, I think that's an excellent question. The way I think about it is when we started doing it, it wasn't like, well, this will be a great legacy thing. You know, let's see if we can do it for 30 years. The view was, let's see if we can do it once. And we did it once, and however you measure success, we said it was successful. There was a lot of institutional support for it. All the deans I've worked for at the law school have been very supportive of it. And it was like, well, we should do this again. And we would get feedback from the small groups of people who would come. You know, I really learned a lot there. So when people are coming and saying that they learned a lot, you know, that gives you encouragement to go forward because these things are labor intensive. South Dakota is a place of scarcity. We never had a lot of money to put these things on, but we generally got positive feedback that this is a good thing that you're doing. You know, I haven't been to any other situation where I learned so much. It was good for our students, and because it gave Native students in particular through the Native American Law Students to say that they are an important presence. They're an important student organization. And by putting on the symposium, that was an important thing that they were actually doing to say, here are some important things that are not normally addressed in the life of the law school. We want to do this. And institutionally, there's been a lot of support for it. And on balance, we've gotten, I think, really positive feedback about doing it. And I think that has encouraged people. And at the beginning, you know, it's like one thing when you're doing something for the first time, you're not sure you'll be able to repeat it. You're not sure how it's actually going to go. And once you've been doing it for like 30 years, you have a little bit more confidence, not misplaced confidence, but confidence that you're doing kind of a good thing. Mm-hmm. And you continue to want to address issues that seem like that they're important and resonant issues in Indian country and across Indian country and across reservations and the state here in South Dakota.
Hmm. All right, let's wrap up with how people can get involved and who's coming, and then we'll have a nice little close here, I think. since the poet is in the house,
yes.
we'll maybe turn a little bit before we leave.
Well, good. Thank you. Again, you know, we hope that a lot of people from the law school will be coming. It's late in the semester. Students are feeling the pressure of finals, but we're really encouraging students. I have a lot of faith in my students that they're going to come out for. There'll be support from the faculty. We hope a lot of people from across campus will come, people in the community, both native and non-native. We're just hoping. You never know that, you know, maybe we'll have a lot of people, maybe we won't have very many people, but as best as we can with our resources, we put out a lot of invitations and advertisements for people to come. And seriously, if it's covered a bit by South Dakota Public Broadcasting, to give it a little presence outside of the courtroom at the law school, that'll be terrific.
glad to do it.
And at the end, I wanted to kind of close with a poem. And this is a poem in the context of my Indian law students. Somehow we developed a theme this year and past years. I wanted my students to pour it all out. It became kind of a mantra in a certain way, both tongue-in-cheek and not so tongue-in-cheek. So this is a poem. It's called Buddha Sends a Hunter-Gatherer Poem to Professor Pommersheim's Indian Law Class. Cut complicity. Gather reason. Seek balance, show respect, find spirit, pour it all out.
Professor Frank Pommersheim, thank you so much for being here again. We will see you next time.
All right. Thank you, Laurie.
And the 15th Biennial Indian Law Symposium is March 21st and 22nd at USD.